This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Roberta Flack's version of Al Green's Let's Stay Together, her molasses-tempoed version. Roberta Flack died yesterday, I believe, 70s R&B pop singer.
Yeah, I read the obit today in the New York Times, and seems like a fascinating, person. Was a teacher in D.C. and I gather became a highly successful, built a real following around D.C. But at least according to the New York Times piece, her first big hit was in Clint Eastwood film. Do you know this film, Play Misty for Me? Is that a film of any note, Chris?
Yeah, no, I've seen Play Misty for Me. I didn't remember. I guess I vaguely remember Roberta Flack. He's a DJ in that, or there's a DJ situation going on in Play Misty for Me. That's the title sort of indicates.
I see. And so there's, which one of her songs? I don't think it was Killing Me Softly. It was the first time I ever saw your face played right in that film, and that's sort of when she blew up. Any other thoughts on Roberta Flack?
Not a lot. I mean, she had a big moment there in the 70s, obviously. I'm not particularly a big fan right of her stuff, but, paying my respect.
Yeah. Killing Me Softly was the big hit. That one, it's not her song. She was on an airplane, heard it playing, and realized it would be could be a big hit for her or something she wanted to do.
And remade by the Fugees in the 90s in a version that I prefer.
Yeah, and remade by the Fugees in the 90s. So there you go. All right, Grizz tonight playing the Suns, who've been a complete disaster. What do you make of the Suns season?
So, the idea with that team, and I thought they'd be better than this, but the idea with that team is like you got three stars and then like you hope you get lucky with the supporting cast. And the reality is they got two stars because Bradley Beal's just not a star anymore. He just got a big contract, which is not the same thing. So you got two stars, one of which Kevin Durant hasn't missed a ton of games, but he's missed, 15 games or something. So he's missed meaningful number of games. And then Devin Booker just has not been his usual self. So your stars haven't been that great, and the supporting cast has been worse than they thought it would be. The use of Nurkic thing just didn't work out at all. They just got rid of him.
Right.
Tyus Jones has been okay, but, we love Tyus in Memphis, but Tyus is at his best. It's a really good backup point guard, not as a starter on a team that's trying to do something. And then the rest of it, there's just not a lot there. It's a lot of, journeyman guys and second-round picks and, it's just not a lot of there. And Durant has still been awesome when he plays, but, there's just not a lot there.
How do you imagine it will play out with Kevin Durant? We do know, there was reporting that the Grizzlies, you know, put in a call, inquired about acquiring Kevin Durant. What might the future, what can one imagine the future would hold for Kevin Durant?
I think there's an interesting question for Phoenix. Obviously, the trade deadline has passed. They looks like they may, there's a good chance they miss the play-in, much less the playoffs. And I think they have to go into the summer. To me, it's hard. You can't talk yourself into tweaking this team. And so they have to go into the summer, like, trying to figure out what they can do. And Bradley Beal still got the no-trade clause, and they tried very hard to get him to waive that and to move him at the deadline. They weren't able to. Devin Booker, I think, will still have a lot of value, but he's still pretty young. I think that's a last resort situation. So I think there's a real good chance Kevin Durant gets traded this summer.
Might the Grizzlies, could the Grizzlies be in the market again for Kevin Durant?
I mean, they've shown interest twice. The last two times his name has been out there, they have registered, they put in an offer, as far as I understand. They put out an offer. I do not know the nature of those offers. It's an interesting question. I suspect, just from a context, this is strictly a context clue, educated guess situation. I think the first time, and that's the time that I think he got traded when he went from Brooklyn to Phoenix, it was several years ago. I think they had to have offered Jaren Jackson or Desmond Bane, probably, because I don't know how else a deal would have gotten done at that point. This time around, I'm guessing they didn't offer either of those guys, right? It was like a Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, Brandon Clark, draft picks. It was probably that. You go into the summer, if they wanted, because Kevin Durant's under contract for like $50 million. And so if you wanted to make an offer for him, you got to get somewhere up with the money. You don't have Marcus Smart's expiring contract to add anymore. And so the question is, like, are you offering Desmond Bane in a deal? And I think not. And if you're not, then how are you even getting to the money? And there is this wrinkle out there of the Marvin Bagley thing, where they have bird rights on Marvin Bagley. He'll be an unrestricted free agent, but they have bird rights on him. They've kept him on the roster. They'll have bird rights going into the summer, which bird rights is colloquial for a clause in the league rules that allows you to go over the salary cap to re-sign your own free agent. And so, in theory, they could do a sign and trade, I think, involving Marvin Bagley. Now that I'm saying this out loud, I'm starting to think maybe you can't do this because of the Phoenix side. I don't know if the Phoenix is so far on above the cap and into the aprons. I don't know if Phoenix is allowed to do a sign and trade deal. Like, will they take back a player who's been signed and traded? So I don't know about that. From a Grizzly standpoint, in theory, if they want to build out a contract for a trade, they could do a sign and trade with Marvin Bagley where it's like a 3-year deal, but the second and third years are non-guaranteed. Because you can't do a 1-year contract of a sign and trade. It has to be multiple years. But I think there's still the wiggle room where you can make the out years non-guaranteed. But again, now that I'm just saying this out loud, I don't know if Phoenix is allowed to do that kind of trade. It's very, very tricky when you're trying to trade someone who has a $50 million contract and you already have like another player who's got a $50 million contract and Bradley Beal and another player that's got like a $30 million contract and Devin Booker. It's like really difficult stuff.
Would you rather be GM of the Suns or the Sixers, or a fan of the Suns or the Sixers?
Sixers. Because you can see the path forward with the Sixers. They got Tyrese Maxey, who is awesome and young.
And Jared McCain.
And they have Jared McCain, who, like, I don't know if he's really a starter. He may be more of a six-man scorer, but he's at least that. And then, like, we'll see what happens. I think their draft pick is owed if it's not, you know, there's a certain protection on it. But there's a chance you tank out and you get a pick. And, like, I do think the Sixers have reached the point where you got to try to, if you can't move on from Joel Embiid because of his contract immediately, you got to move forward without considering Joel Embiid in terms of you building your team. I do think Philly is at that point. It's not an easy turnaround for Philly, but like I like that situation better than the Phoenix situation.
76ers lost again last night. So the Grizzlies now half a game behind Denver. They got Phoenix tonight. I was interested. Like, the Grizzlies get a lot of criticism for their record against teams that are better than 500. And Drew was interesting. Like, I didn't, no idea. So Denver's about to embark on this this schedule where they're playing 9 out of 10 against teams better than 500. And the other team, by the way, is the Suns. And they are 10-4 against teams that are 500 or better. They've been beating up on bad teams too.
10-14, you mean?
They're 10-14. Yeah, I'm sorry, 10-14. Yeah, 10-14.
I think I made a reference to this in the comment yesterday, but like Denver just came off, like before they lost to the Lakers, they'd won 9 straight. If you go back and look, it was like 2 games against Charlotte and 2 games against Portland and 2 games against New Orleans. I mean, it was all just junky teams. And so, yeah, most teams have a losing record against winning teams. And that sounds odd in a zero-sum game where, like, if someone wins and someone loses every game, you would think it would even out a little bit more. But it's because there's 3 teams that are just better than everybody else. And so, like, everyone's losing to those teams, right? It's like we talked about with the Knicks yesterday, where the Knicks can't beat the good teams, right? Like, nobody can beat those teams other than Minnesota with a 16-point comeback with 4 minutes to go on the road last night. But otherwise, nobody can beat those teams. And so that leads to most of the good teams have losing records against other good teams.
Did you happen to watch that, by the way? Were you watching that? I was not.
I actually checked I looked at the scores on my phone right before I went to bed, and they were down, I don't know, 18 with 6 minutes to go or something stupid like that. And so I just went to bed.
How are the vibes in Minnesota around the Timberwolves these days?
It's interesting. It's fatalistic, but really interested and committed. I actually went to the game. I left at halftime because I wanted to go to sleep. But I went to the game a couple nights ago that was in Minnesota against the Thunder. It was the second half of the ESPN thing. The Grizzlies were the first half, and it was an 8:30 tip off here. So I was credentialed for the game because I'd done something else earlier in the day. So I went in and went, and like, the atmosphere was awesome. Like, it was jam-packed, and everyone was roaring, and they do the thing where you stand up until the first basket, and, like, the energy was great, but, like, I don't think people there here are convinced, like, the team's good, you know?
It's funny, though. They got a bunch of good players. Long, talented, Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid. Like, they've got a bunch of really good players.
There's still an element of wanting to think the team can still be good. But I think everyone sort of knows that, like, the best chance they had was last year, and now that Conley's older and they made the trade of Towns, and like just the ceiling is lower on it than it was last year.
One of the things that caught my eye was Chris Finch, after the T-Wolves coach, after last night's game, he said the following. It's about the Thunder. It's so frustrating to play this team because they foul all the time. They really do. They foul all the time, and then you can't touch Shea.
I think you know, he's seeing things from the perspective of his own team, and so I think probably, you know, if you want to talk to Mark Daigneault, he'll probably tell you that, like, oh, you can't touch Anthony Edwards, and like that team fouls all the time. So I don't know about the veracity of it. I enjoyed the demeanor. I'm a fan of Chris Finch's demeanor.
I like him. Yeah.
he wasn't like super angry and worked up about it. It was like everything he says is sort of a wry out of the side of your mouth. You're sort of like shrugging when you're talking kind of thing. And so, like, I liked that his sort of, there's almost this resigned, wry quality to the way he was saying it.
Jokic with 19 assists last night is the old Sabonis, the original Sabonis, 1.0, was the best passing big man ever. I take it we have a new best passing big man ever.
Yeah, I've seen Arvydas Sabonis play, but it was mostly past his prime with Portland when he was still a great passer. But I haven't like gone to crunch the tape. Like Bill Walton was pretty good.
He was good too. Yeah.
Jokic is pretty amazing. There may have been some generous scorekeeping in that game. I saw some clips on social media about like they credited this as an assist. It was, he passed the ball to Michael Porter, he takes 3 dribbles and does a move on a guy, and it's like 4 seconds later and you still get credit for the assist. So there was some of that going on. But yeah, Jokic is a fabulous passer.
By the way, I don't know if it was Hollinger, someone at The Athletic wrote a piece suggesting that last second heaves should not be counted against your 3-point percentage, or making at least positing, because if you took away last second heaves, Jokic would be the leading 3-point shooter in the league, ahead of Luke Kennard. But he is totally happy to throw up last second heaves as opposed to just waiting a beat and letting it go after the buzzer so it won't count against his shooting percentage. Do you have a theory? Should they count as last second heaves?
It's an interesting question. It gets to a broader question of like what we want out of statistics. Do we want them to be a record of everything that happens, or do we want them to convey a truth about what they're trying to convey, which is not, it's sort of difference between fact and truth a little bit.
Yeah.
The fact is those shots, if you make them, count for three. And so that's a shot that was taken from the 3-point line, but including them in a 3-point percentage does not lessens the accuracy of that statistic to tell you how good of a shooter someone is. You know, there's all kinds of stuff like that. Like, you know, if you pass the ball to someone who gets fouled on the attempt, like, should that register as an assist, right? It sort of, you know, it speaks to your passing ability to set up a score. It's sort of like how the stat site Clean the Glass, which is a thing you have to pay for, which I do, like, they just eliminate quote-unquote garbage time from all of their statistics. And so stats you'll look at on that site won't match the stats on NBA.com because they're literally just taking stuff out that they've declared not really meaningful, right?
Yep.
So you want statistics to give you a greater truth about the thing you're trying to look for, or you just want a record of everything that happens? Yeah. I don't know.
Chris's piece up at the Daily Memphian. You can read it again. Grizz Suns tonight. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. We got Fish on Friday. On Tuesday, coming up next, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. By Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C., author of three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon, also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, joins me now from D.C., not from, and I guess this is good, although I shouldn't joke about it because it's a serious deal, not from the island of Santorini.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of enduring an earthquake here in Washington, D.C. It's kind of a
different
daily earthquake. You might even call it and we can turn this into a viral phrase if you want, a social media earthquake.
Is it really more of an earthquake or is it a tsunami?
Well, you'd have to call FEMA, but we've closed FEMA. By
the way, could you please send me by the end of close of business today five bullet points about what the hell
about
you
what
did
I've
last,
done
what
today,
you did last,
yesterday,
no, last week.
Week
last week how you justified your existence last week. I mean, you did this show, that can be one, right? But I don't know,
is that two though, preparing for the show and
no that's one,
doing the show
and
that's
walking the dogs. Yeah. I don't know if walking the dogs is gonna count, but
the dogs is not a work-related bullet point accomplishment. I would guess that Elon Musk would say,
this was a man with
13 children, he would say, if you can't take care of the dogs, don't have the dogs, or just hire somebody to take care.
By the way, this was not where we were on the list, but it is an interesting question. What is going to happen with those, if however many employees there are, all send in bullet points?
2.2 million. Let's stop a minute. So Elon Musk, on his own initiative, who claims he's no one in the government, just a nice advisor, now he claims he's not the head of Doge, because if he's the head of Doge, he's in violation of the Constitution of the United States, which requires people who are the head of departments to be voted on by the Senate, to be confirmed. Sends out a message on Monday using an official U.S. government email address to every federal government employee except the military, including all the members of the judiciary, which is its own separate branch. And the message says,
let's be honest, John Roberts didn't get one of these.
All the people who worked for John Roberts got one. I don't know if the judges themselves got them, but the judicial employees got them. And the judicial employees don't work for Elon Musk, and they don't work for Donald Trump either. Saying by close of business, by midnight Monday, you need to reply to this email with a list of the five bullet points explaining what you did last week that justified you having your job. And a previous email said, if you don't do it, you'll be fired. And he said you could send four bullet points or six bullet points, but you need to justify your existence. Well, first of all, I thought Doge was supposed to be improving efficiency and reducing bureaucracy and reducing waste of time. This is so offensive and insulting on so many levels. To be honest, whatever you think about whether the federal government does what it needs to do or not at every moment, and do you do what you need to do at every moment, I would say that we haven't seen whole offices of people revealed, unveiled, sitting around doing nothing. People do their work. That's why the federal government works. That's why your Social Security check gets there. That's why the debt payments get made. That's why military aircraft fly on and off aircraft carriers. That's why Boar's Head, the Boar's Head meat factory was uncovered to be a hotbed, not of nice, beautiful cold cuts, but salmonella. So the idea that people are sitting around doing nothing is simply an insult. And by the way, doesn't your boss know what you were doing last week? I don't have a boss right now, except inside my brain, but my wife's boss knows what she's doing every day. Your boss basically knows what you're doing. If you manage 12 people inside Google or inside a Denny's restaurant or inside the federal government's FAA, you know what the 12 people are doing. You don't need them to send you an email saying, tell me what you did last week. And if you do, that's a different problem.
Who's but reading them? Who's reading
if them? If 2 million people send, even if, let's just say, 1 million people reply to the email saying, here's what I did. What's the point of that?
Well, there was a story that they're running it through AI to determine which jobs can be eliminated is one of the things that I read this morning.
Right.
Which is itself offensive. Like, not even a real human being is going to decide.
Well, of course not. Of course not. 2 million people can't. 2 million emails can't be read. I think the other thing that they would do is they would match the return emails with the outgoing emails, and then build a list of people who didn't bother to reply. Mind you, in the middle of all this, whole departments of the government, the Justice Department, the FBI, HHS, said, "Don't reply. We'll decide. We'll decide whether you're doing your job or not." Not Elon Musk, not his AI, not his group of five guys, some of whom didn't go to college.
It's so weird. Like, with all due respect, you acknowledge that, and I think we have to, that Joe Biden telling everyone everything was great did not resonate with the American people. Like, Donald Trump was elected to do some things, including lower the price of eggs. And right. It didn't feel like it was these things. It didn't feel like it was firing park rangers.
Well, we're gonna get to another arena that's really important. But can we go back to the actual earthquake?
That's fine. You're the one who took us off on this path. Santorini.
This is an incredible story. Santorini is this beautiful Greek island in the middle of the Aegean Sea, which is sort of like the Caribbean of the Mediterranean. It's a tiny place. It's only 28 square miles. If you've been to Washington, D.C., it may surprise you to know, I know off the top of my head, is 67 square miles. So Santorini is pretty small. It's bigger than Key West, but not much bigger than Key West, like that. And Santorini has been occupied with human beings since 4,000 B.C., 4,000 years before the birth of Christ, there were people living on this little island. Frankly, it's beautiful. It's appealing. You can go fishing. There's nice caves.
They're probably taking Instagram photos. Right, exactly.
Beautiful, right. And they especially appreciated the opportunity to take photos before they could.
Right.
it has been hit by an insane number of earthquakes, this tiny little island. At one point in early February, there were 160 earthquakes in 9 days. So that's a week and 2 days, 160 earthquakes. That's 18 earthquakes of 4.0 or more a day. That's an earthquake every 1 hour and 20 minutes. A 4.0 earthquake or greater, a 4.0 earthquake you can feel. You will know that a 4.0 earthquake is happening. What happened on Santorini? 15,000 people living on the island. They closed the schools. They closed all the government but City Hall, and 11,500 of the 15,000 people fled to the Greek mainland because they didn't want the 2,000-year-old buildings toppling over on them. And they don't really know what happened. They don't really know what was going on. In just the last few weeks, the earthquakes have calmed down. There was a 4.4 quake yesterday. Overall, they measured 20,000 earthquakes in a month. So that's 1,000 earthquakes every 36 hours.
Well, you know, the National Earthquake Center is right here in Memphis, Tennessee, University of Memphis.
Is that right? For the whole country?
It's right. It's in between.
The whole world.
It's in between.
I think that's true. I'll ask him what's going on.
In between Memphis or the University of Memphis and Second President.
Yeah, so there you go. Can I jump around?
You guys are
anything
subject,
else you want to say about the. Yes, we have our own.
There could be a big earthquake. Earthquakes are no joke. Anyway, Santorini is a beautiful place. That's just. We just wanted to start with,
that's
with
fine.
An actual.
I wanted
set
to jump around because before I go back to the bulletins and the funding stuff and whatever. Tell me what Walmart told you last week. What happened? They did their earnings reports, and we are passionate about earnings reports here on the Jeff Calkins Show. What did Walmart reveal last week?
Well, what Walmart revealed last week was kind of amazing. Walmart, just for the record, Walmart is often referred to as the largest store in America, the largest retailer in the world. Walmart's the largest company of any kind ever in human history, ever, of any kind.
Measured by
General Motors,
what's largest
big Chinese
mean?
Companies.
What's largest mean? What's largest
yeah,
mean?
ExxonMobil. Exxon and Mobil merge. Walmart's twice the size of them. It's staggeringly large.
I asked, what does largest mean? Largest.
For me, largest means really literally one thing. Largest means total sales.
Okay.
How much money do you take in each year? Sometimes largest means market capitalization of a public company. If you take all the shares of stock and multiply them by the stock price, what is the company worth? Apple is the quote unquote largest company in that way. But that's, to me, that's not, that's a measure just of stock market value, of invest something investors care about. How many employees do you have? How much economic activity do you generate? Walmart's number one, by the way. Amazon's number two. We'll talk about that in a minute. Sales last year were $681 billion, and that's basically $2 billion a day. That's amazing. $681 billion. But the big news from last Thursday, I think it was last Thursday, was that Walmart's total sales in 2024 grew 5.1%, and the U.S. economy grew 2.8%. So a place that sells wheat bread and milk and chicken breast, toothpaste, deodorant, laundry detergent, that sells literally just the stuff we need all the time. Sometimes you go there and buy school clothes, or you buy an inexpensive roller bag, you know, to take on the plane, grew twice as fast as the U.S. economy. This is not Google. This is not Apple. This is not, you know, Microsoft. They're not selling software. They're selling stuff. So that's a truly impressive performance. And they rely on ordinary American consumers. Half the adults in America go to Walmart every week. 130, 140 million Americans go to a Walmart every single week. It's really the commons. And so those things are extraordinary. The other thing that's extraordinary is 5 years ago, people thought Walmart was basically over, just a tattered old, you know, kind of worn out box.
Like Sears, maybe. Like Sears, Kmart,
like
whatever.
Sears,
yeah.
Like Sears. Uh-huh. Like Sears. They were just going to be put literally into the grave by Amazon, the way, in fact, Walmart put Sears into the grave.
Right.
And now Walmart is battling back in an incredible way. Walmart's digital sales are 18%, e-commerce sales, 18% of total sales. That's $123 billion a year. That's more than double what it was 5 years ago. And Target's total sales are $107 billion. So Walmart sells online more than Target sells all year. If you want somebody who's
That's
becoming
incredible.
Slowly irrelevant, it's Target. You may like Target, but Target's not a force in the U.S. economy.
The before we move on to other things, a couple other retail yeah. stories you had here. Joann's Fabrics, not necessarily the sweet spot for sports talk listeners, but it's
the
close.
Opposite. Well, maybe you know, there may be people in your life who knit, who sew, who craft. You know, Joann's Fabrics is kind of a legendary. Yeah. If you needed a skein of yarn, if you needed a new a needlepoint pattern, if you needed needles and thread, buttons, I've been to Joann's Fabrics. My wife, my daughter have all been to Joann's Fabrics. Gone. It's over. 82 years, 19,000 employees. They declared bankruptcy twice. In the space of a year. And yesterday they announced they're not going to try and climb back out. 800 stores. So we're left with Michael's, which is a pretty good craft store, but doesn't have anything like Joann's had, right, in terms of that stuff. And then Joann said we were put out of business by people buying all this stuff online.
Oh, yeah.
So when you look at the retail landscape, we created Walmart, the largest company in human history. Companies didn't create Walmart. Companies kind of created Microsoft. Companies, you know, drive a lot of commerce. But we created Walmart, and we just killed Joann's by deciding we were going to shop elsewhere.
Starbucks laying off a bunch of folks?
Yeah, I mean, this is just a data point. It's a little like Joann's. Starbucks announced yesterday that it was laying off 1,000 headquarter white-collar employees. They have 16,000. Literally yesterday and today, they announced they're firing 1,000 of them. They're giving them good severance, but they're getting rid of more than 5% of their white-collar staff.
The baristas are safe. The baristas.
The baristas are safe. Do you remember what happened last week? Let's see how good your memory is.
Southwest Air had their first layoffs ever in history.
Ever.
You don't think
right.
I listened to
this
segment?
Largest
I pay
layoff.
Rapt attention to this segment.
You do. You do pay yes. rapt attention. We could start a quiz segment about something from the
God
previous
God forbid. Like Kevin Cerrito. Right.
Like Kevin
if you
Cerrito,
listen
yeah.
this week, you get extra points for what exactly.
Yeah, we talked about all these things last week.
Exactly.
Next week,
right.
an update on the Santorini earthquakes. Right. Last week, at exactly this moment, Southwest Airlines announced it was laying off 1,750 people, larger number, smaller group. 12,000. They laid off 15% of their white collar staff. So there's a little trend there, which is clearly Starbucks, Southwest feel like talk about the overhead, the bureaucracy, the people who sit in the cubicles, who don't fly planes, who don't put people in their seats and check their seatbelts, who don't deliver coffee, who don't clean stores and design stores and open stores, that in both cases gotten a little heavy on the overhead. And they're going to thin it out. So that I thought that was very interesting. A reminder, Starbucks has been struggling for really a couple of years.
They got a new coach, though. They got a new coach. They got a new head coach.
And who is the new coach?
The new head coach came. Damn it. I forgot the name of the new head coach.
He came from Chipotle.
Came from Chipotle, Jeffrey says.
Brian Nickel, who came from Chipotle. So if all they want is for Starbucks to be as successful as Chipotle,
okay,
and his
NIH funding. This is a thing that is actually near and dear to Memphians' hearts because the folks at St. Jude and UT Health Science Center, et cetera, have been alarmed by cuts in research funding or holds in research funding. Also applies to the NIH. What's happening here?
I mean, this is one of these perfect examples of. Doge and Elon Musk talking through their hat. Or you could use a different
ass.
Part of
the
anatomy.
Word is ass. They're talking, hat,
they're
ass.
Talking,
right,
they're,
exactly.
They're talking through their ass. First of all, total NIH funding is $47 billion a year, not quite $1 billion a week for medical and scientific research. The Pentagon spends $2.4 billion a day. All of NIH takes you to January 19th at the Pentagon. And what we get from that scientific funding is, in fact, exactly what Elon Musk and to some degree Donald Trump, when he talks about it, are talking about. The government isn't doing the scientific research. Private organizations are doing it. Hospitals are doing it. Universities are doing it. Drug companies are doing it. And that's what you want. We're giving them money that they then add money to. Nobody's totally reliant on NIH funding. It's a kind of matching system. We give you $2 million. You have $3 million of your own. Now you have $5 million to study leukemia.
I could have done that math. I could have done that math. Just so you know.
Right.
two right. and three.
So what's happened? By the way, interest on the debt last year, the credit card interest of America last year, $881 billion. So we don't have $47 billion for all scientific research across the
Alzheimer's,
country.
Alzheimer's, cancer.
Related to health, but we have $881 billion for the credit card interest. Okay, I think we have the $47 billion. What Doge has done, they were forbidden to stop the grant process. They were forbidden by the federal courts. You've committed to giving people this money. You must keep it. So they've pulled a little bureaucratic jujitsu. All NIH grants, again, this is something ostensibly Doge wants. Each individual grant is reviewed by a group of people. 10 to 15 people sit down who are experts in the field, not the people getting the money. And they review what the money's for. What the track record is this a good investment for the next
step? Seems good.
They've paused those meetings. There are something like 50 or 60 of those meetings a month. They've said, okay, we're going to give you the grant money, but we're not going to do the meetings. Well, you can't get the money without the meetings. Across America, MIT has paused all non-faculty hiring. Several big universities, including the University of Pittsburgh, have stopped admitting PhD scientists because they're not sure they're going to have funding for them. Ladies and gentlemen, we have $1 billion a week to advance all medical science research in America, if we have anything. And by the way, here's a stat to put in your hat when you're talking through it.
Yes.
Every drug approved between 2016 and today by the FDA, every single medicine that has won approval relied on NIH funding to get going.
Even Ozempic.
So this is an investment in our future health. Make America healthy again. Turn the grant money back on. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with reviewing the process. There's nothing wrong with saying, is 47 the right number? Is 42 the right number? Is 53 the right number? But one thing that the Trump administration has done is said, you can't spend a dime until we review what you've been spending money on. Yeah, that's not really fair. Let people go forward with the work they're doing, with the contracts they've signed, the commitments they've made, and you can review it in process. In June, you can say, we've spent a month reviewing all the money that goes to the University of Pennsylvania Medical School. We want to talk about these three things. But don't tell them they can't do anything until you get to the review. That's bureaucracy.
And just to be clear, the court said they couldn't halt this funding.
The court said they couldn't do that.
Hold on. Let me see if I have this right.
Okay.
The court said they couldn't halt the funding. And so what they did was halt the reviews, and the review process is
that permit the funding.
Let me state it. The reviews are necessary, mandated, according to their own regulations, aren't allowed to do the funding without the reviews. So effectively,
right, and the reviews are exactly what
you want them to be doing.
They're a way of preventing the funding from going to random things here and there. Okay, I'm worried. Don't.
I just want you to tell me about the eggs. How are we doing on eggs? I want to go to Denny's and get me a Grand Slam.
Here we go. This is so sad. Denny's announced yesterday they are joining Waffle House in charging a surcharge for every order that contains eggs as a dish. There's eggs in pancakes, there's eggs in waffles. Right. Every order where eggs are on the plate, scrambled, fried, over easy, they're charging a surcharge. Denny's is a little incompetent, which is too bad. When I lived in Florida, I ate at Denny's all the time. I had a girlfriend. We had the frequent Denny's eater card. I forget what Denny's was, the Denny's Club. And the Super Bird, a turkey sandwich with melted Swiss. I loved that. But they said they're going to charge for every dish that includes an order of eggs. They won't tell you what the charge is. They don't tell you which restaurants are going to impose the charge. They won't even tell you, and they said they won't tell you which regions of the country they're going to impose the charges. They're just warning you that they're going to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, just for the record, that's not how to do it. If you're going to announce something new that's going to impact people,
it'll be store to store. So you walk in and you'll see. It's not going to just appear on your check. You're not going to get the Grand Slam breakfast.
Although I looked on Twitter and I didn't see any signs.
What is a dozen eggs? By the way, does a dozen eggs cost now? I have no idea. I don't look at prices.
Well, it really depends on where you shop. One of the grocery stores we go to, you can get a dozen eggs for $6.99, $7.49.
Oh, my God.
One of the stores we go to, these are not Whole Foods. This is Giant and Safeway. The Giant, they're literally $9.99 for a dozen eggs. Now, a dozen eggs, if each egg is a dollar, right, that's 12 bucks. So it's still less than a buck. They're still good. We are down now because of avian flu and the impact it's had. Any of your laying chickens get avian flu, you need to kill them all because it's so infectious. It's so contagious. The egg production in the country is now only where it was in 2016. And there's whatever, you know, there's 12 million more egg eating Americans. I wanted to go back a step, though. Uh-huh. It's kind of believe it or not. Yeah. Tell me which you think is bigger. As a restaurant,
the way you do it, believe it or not, is this: you'd say, Denny's is bigger than what are we comparing it to?
Cerrito. Let's do it Cerrito style. Which is bigger, Denny's or Waffle House?
Jeffrey, got an opinion? Which is bigger, Denny's or Waffle? I'm going to guess.
Are you doing by sales or stores?
Both, either or both.
Sales,
they align.
Which
this
is
case.
Bigger?
I'm going to say Denny's.
I'm going to say Waffle House is bigger.
It is interesting because the Denny's restaurants are real restaurants, right? A Waffle House is kind of tiny. Waffle House has 2,100 restaurants and Denny's has 1,500. And Waffle House has three times the sales that Denny's
this
has.
This is the one rare moment where I was right and Jeffrey was wrong. I'm going to
especially
I'm
about
gonna,
fast food.
I'm going to absolutely treasure
I was
this
thinking more Denny's
forever
was
nationwide.
Denny's
ever.
Is nationwide versus Waffle House more southeast.
You don't have to tell me your logic. I just got it right. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it.
Denny's tends not to be busy. Waffle House. I wish I could go
appreciate
have breakfast
it.
For lunch.
Either one.
At Waffle House right now.
He's
have a good week.
On Twitter, at C. Fishman. On Twitter, at C. Fishman. We got to get out of here. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason. John, Jessica Benson joins their program at 11:25. Tim Murray will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. For now, work's done.